Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: Visit Springfield, PIORG, and the Illinois Education Association.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Allegations of sexual harassment led to a state lawmaker stepping down this summer, but the fallout continues, and the Illinois House Speaker is facing backlash. We'll discuss that, and what do the latest campaign finance numbers show when it comes to the upcoming election? That and more ahead on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is off again this week. Our guests are the Professor Emeritus, Kent Redfield, and the Chicago Tribune Chief Political Writer, Rick Pearson. And thanks to both of you guys for being here with us this week.
Thank you, Sean. Here.
So, Rick, let me go to you first. You've been doing a lot of reporting on this story regarding the former now State Representative Harry Benton. The first I heard something was up regarding him was much earlier this year. I guess it's the right word to say he was being punished by the Speaker. He was kicked out of the Democratic caucus. Also, his committee assignments were stripped from him. But there was no public explanation. We didn't know what was really happening there. Since then, more has come to light. And Benton is a Will County Democrat. He has since resigned. Catch us up on what has occurred with him here in recent weeks.
Well, with my colleague, Jeremy Gorner, our State House correspondent, we'd actually been working on a months-long investigation into allegations of sexual harassment against Harry Benton. And what we learned is that the actions that Speaker Welch took to remove him from the caucus and committee assignments came 3 years after the Speaker was first informed of sexual harassment allegations that were raised by a former Benton staffer. And we talked to the former Benton staffer, who was one of the first hires that Harry Benton made after becoming a state lawmaker, and she lasted 6 months on the job and detailed a lengthy list of harassment allegations against Benton, many of them of a sexual nature, and was told by a friend that you should contact the Speaker's office about this. And so she did. She was given a list of options that is a standard form given to anybody with a complaint involving harassment in the General Assembly, and it contains a series of options on how to report complaints. And option one was to call the Speaker's Chief of Staff, which is what she ended up doing. Option two, file a report with the Legislative Inspector General. Option three, contact the Department of Human Rights. Option four, contact the federal EEOC. So she followed option one. And she reported those complaints in April of 2023 and waited, filed some new complaints just a few weeks later, and then heard nothing back from the Speaker's office. She ended up quitting her job at the end of June, and calendar logs show that the Speaker's office didn't even reach out to apparently even question Benton until after the woman had quit her job, and not until July, 3 months after she reported it. So we are seeing in some of these responses lately that the Speaker said that he, you know, acted quickly. Well, I'm sorry, that does not seem to be quickly.
It's 3 years ago, you said, right? I mean, that's...
And that was three years ago. In the meantime, knowing about these allegations, the Speaker spends over $1 million to get Benton reelected. And then let's move fast forward to this year. In February, a lobbyist ran into Benton at a bar in River North neighborhood of Chicago, where he showed this female lobbyist pictures from his phone claiming they were women that he slept with. and then made lewd comments towards the lobbyist. And the lobbyist told this to some members of the legislature, who then went to Speaker Welch, and the speaker then filed a complaint. And that's what led to him filed a complaint with the Inspector General's office, and that led to the action of him being removed from the committees, and ultimately led to his resignation.
Go ahead.
The speaker has maintained he's acted properly all along on this. As I said, the 3-month delay to talk to Benton, he claims that the former Benton staffer didn't want any action taken until she left his employ. The former staffer says she doesn't recall saying that. The former staffer was urged by the speaker's office to file a complaint with the Inspector General's office. And frankly, that's really not how this process works. She did not want to file a complaint with the Inspector General because she was a young staffer in one of her first jobs in government. She really wanted to have a career in government and politics. She thought an Inspector General's report would blacklist her forever. She figured that the Speaker's office could handle it in-house. And obviously, you see what they did. Absolutely nothing but spent money to get him reelected. And then it took to a lobbyist, someone of a higher influence than a mere lowly staffer, to raise some hell for any action to take place.
Well, Kent, this, from what you've heard here, and I know you followed this reporting, but times have changed. I mean, this, I guess in the not too distant past, a lot of this activity took place and nobody ever heard about it, but times have changed, and it now is a situation where this can lead to bringing down some powerful people. We remember the Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, and this was one of the key reasons that Madigan was basically booted by his caucus. But what are your thoughts of what you've heard?
Times have changed, except they haven't. I mean, that's, you know, part of the underlying is context, is about culture and about whether, you know, people in positions of power, particularly when, you know, you've got in this case, a male legislator dealing with a, you know, relatively young staffer who is an at-will employee, you know, that's a pretty vast power differential. And, you know, as opposed to a lobbyist who we assume has experience and standing and reputation, is in a much better position. Certainly is not an employee of the person that they are bringing allegations against. So we're not only talking about Speaker Madigan, Speaker Madigan's chief of staff, former clerk of the House, who eventually ended up going to prison involving the, you know, the corruption scandal, lost his job because of the fallout from allegations that have how the work environment that he had been creating for the people that worked for the legislature. So this is certainly about people, but it's also about process. And the Inspector General model, which I think has probably worked pretty well for the executive branch and the constitutional officers, has not worked to this point very well with the way that it's been structured for the legislature. And this is 118 people that all are constitutional officers that all got elected. I don't know structurally what's the best way to handle this. There would certainly be in a different setting, the Speaker of the House would have been a mandatory reporter that would have had to bring things to someone in a human resources position, or in the case of an executive inspector general. So we can't do these things kind of handling stuff in-house. You know, it's fraught with a lot of danger. I certainly can, sympathize with the woman who was put in a, what she perceived to be a terribly awkward position. But I think the individuals didn't serve her well, but the process, this process did not serve her well.
All right, well, we'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.
We're back on State Week along with Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune and Professor Emeritus Kent Redfield. And Rick, let me go back to you. We're still talking about this case regarding Harry Benton, how this was handled in the Illinois House with the House Speaker. I guess I would have to ask the question, is Speaker Welch in some difficulty here with his caucus? Because I'm sure there's people that are not happy with how this was handled.
Well, there's not only this issue of how things were handled with this former staffer from 3 years ago. There's also the fact that this former staffer was a one-time intern in the House Speaker's office. And in our reporting, we discovered that the Speaker had communicated to this intern on, or former intern, she was not an intern of his at the time or under the employ of the Speaker's office, but had communicated with this former staffer on Instagram and using various emojis, like heart-eyed emojis and things like that, which she said made her feel very uncomfortable. And so you have his handling of sexual harassment. You have this issue of what are you doing out there on social media and why. And all of this with full knowledge of the issue of the Me Too stuff that, as we said, helped bring the power of Mike Madigan down because of her vote from women. So is the Speaker in trouble? I think among a certain element of the caucus, yes. And I think they're certainly questioning his judgment, his wisdom, why he basically supported Harry Benton for re-election, knowing that this list of very credible allegations was hanging out there, and he apparently did nothing about it. There are people that are very, in the Women's Caucus, that are pissed off. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, you've got a combination of the women who are mad. You also have very strong defenders in the Black Caucus who say, you know, well, we should use this as kind of a learning process and move forward, that the Speaker has done good things. You know, this is, and part of this too is the Inspector General's report is due out at the end of the month. And truly, it's not going to really focus on what the former staffer said. It's going to be more on what this lobbyist said, because what the former staffer said is past the time limit for consideration by the Inspector General. But you have Welch issuing these defensive statements saying that the Inspector General's report will vindicate his actions. There's no reason to believe that Inspector General's report is going to adjudicate anything involving that former staffer. So there's still lots of outstanding questions about how he handled that. And there was nothing that prevented him from removing him from the Democratic caucus and from his committee assignments in 2023, after that intern complained, or after the former staffer complained. There's nothing to prevent him from doing that. Why didn't he?
How much do you think is this due to this seat, this district, being sort of, and there aren't that many, it's in play. I mean, and Benton has shown he can win there. Do you think that played the key role here for what's taken place?
I would suppose that. That it's, of course, that it's politics, And that, putting politics first over the, I'll say, mental health of this former staffer. She said she basically she had to quit because she was worried about her mental health. Yeah, what does that say? The speaker has a lot of unanswered questions facing him. And as he's been encouraged to be transparent by the governor and by others, and frankly, we're still waiting for that transparency because nothing the speaker's office has provided us in our reporting has addressed our individual questions. It's just been kind of this generic, I believe in transparency. Well, we'll see when the report comes that it's not going to vindicate him. It's not going to criticize him either way because it's not going to address what he's trying to say it does.
And Kent, we don't see a lot of turnover in these positions, especially House Speaker, for example, because Mike Madigan held it for so long. But here going into an election season, I know Democrats have a super majority, are likely to retain that. But still, it's a situation where we just don't see a lot of knee-jerk reactions to remove these leaders.
It certainly is a case that, this raises questions about judgment on the part of the speaker and about leadership. And, we came out of a situation with an all-powerful speaker. Welch has done a good job of kind of bringing together all of the different factions and groups of the Democratic Party, but there's a lot of diversity within the caucus he's presiding over. There's not the specter of some kind of criminal case or the involvement of the federal government or anything in terms of this. And so, the old you can't beat somebody with nobody, there's no name or rival that's been angling for the speaker's seat. That name isn't out there. And so I suspect that that we'll end up with the speaker's election and after next spring, and I suspect Welch will probably survive, and hopefully there'll be some personal and some structural changes that will result in better process, but better outcomes for the individuals that are involved. But and that the Republicans are in an incredibly weak position. If it were close, if they had a ton of money, if there were lots of competitive seats, if there were big constitutional contests going on with lots of voices out there of incumbent constitutional officers who are Republicans and stuff, that environment is just, is blank. And so it's going to be hard for the Republicans to make much out of this.
We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association, serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at ieanea.org.
Well, we're back on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Kent Redfield and Rick Pearson. And Rick, the latest campaign filings have occurred. It shows Republicans are really struggling to try to mount challenges to Democrats when it comes to raising enough money, not just at the top of the ticket, but pretty much any of the statewide races. In fact, Darren Bailey's campaign, I believe, had raised about $1.3 million, but it's spent quite a bit of that already. He's running against somebody who has unlimited resources in J.B. Pritzker. What do you think right now when you see these numbers of Republican chances this fall?
Interesting the fact that for Darren Bailey's case, for example, while he did raise that money, he spent more. And basically, he spent more because it was the cost of fundraising to raise what he did. So there was he saw no net benefit from paying all this money for grassroots fundraising. Obviously, this goes beyond Darren Bailey, and this goes to the whole state party, is that the big money funders have basically given up. The ones that were around in the past, Bruce Rauner, he's gone. Ken Griffin, he's gone. You've got some of the traditional big money. They're not in this race. They're not in Illinois Republican politics anymore. And that is just, again, another continued decline in the relevancy of the Illinois Republican Party in this state.
Do you think it also, I mean, when I look at this and I see Republicans up and down the ballot, especially on the statewide ticket, amazing to me to see no one that really is an elected official right now of any, with any name ID. Darren Bailey's run before. People may know his name. And certainly Don Tracy in political circles is known as the U.S. Senate nominee. But they don't have a bench right now, it appears.
Well, and I mean, Don Tracy is known to us as the Republican U.S. Senate nominee. No one else knows who he is. None, ask the voters. I mean, I would be hard pressed that anybody, particularly in the vote-rich part of the state where I'm at, has any clue who Don Tracy is. And that's not to say Don Tracy isn't a nice person and all of that. I just mean that's also a reflection too. Here you have a U.S. Senate race. Basically, Juliana Stratton, the lieutenant governor and Democratic nominee, really hasn't had to spend much money yet. And this should be a time period where you would expect Tracy to be spending a little bit more to kind of gain that name recognition as we start getting into the heavy political season of after Labor Day.
Kent, you almost have to have some type of control of some offices to really raise money. People are trying to get influence, trying to get access, and that's where a lot of these donations come from. And right now, Republicans are struggling big. I don't know. Have you ever seen one of the parties in Illinois struggle so much when it comes to raising these types of funds in an election year?
No, I got here in 75. It was pretty competitive at that point, and it is, with a momentary resurgence under Bruce Rauner, you've got some parity with Ken Griffin and Richard Ulin, two of those billionaires putting money in there. But that obscures the larger picture that the demographics are running against the Republicans, policy issues running against them. And so the suburbs are more diverse. That used to be their strength. They've lost the suburbs in terms of, on social issues. And again, that changing demographics. And then, the traditional funders of the Republican Party, manufacturers, manufacturing association, chamber of commerce, big companies, medical society, professionals, if the only groups that were big players in 2000 that are still around are the realtors. Some of them are highly ideological. Most people are giving money because they want access to power. Democrats have all of the positions, they have all of the power, and the heart of the Democratic funding base, unions, trial lawyers, health professionals. The medical society, often back in the 30 years ago, 20 years ago, would be the number one contributor to campaigns, looking at state elections. Now it's the nursing homes, hospital associations, it's health facilities, it's not health professionals. I mean, so the medicine has changed, and the Republicans have been the losers, the Democrats have been the winners. All things are
Certainly.
cyclical, and we didn't even mention, redistricting, which gives, is worth 10 seats, the way that the Democrats have drawn the maps. So it's a very, very grim picture for the Republican Party in terms of raising money and attracting candidates. And certainly nobody outside the state of Illinois wants to help the Illinois Republican Party.
Rick, let me ask you, because you reported on this, the AFL-CIO just had delayed, I guess, endorsing candidates. Of course, it often goes heavy toward Democrats. What was going on there?
The AFL-CIO normally does its endorsements shortly after the legislature adjourns. They decided to basically put the Democrats on pause and have some chats over. They were very disgruntled over a lack of their agenda progressing through the spring session, and various agenda items that they had wanted to see, and nothing happened. And so this was kind of a wake-up call to the Democrats at writ large in Illinois that, you know, we have always been one of your constituencies, and we're a powerful constituency. And if you don't listen to us, you're not going to take us for granted. So there were meetings held, Tim Dre, who's head of the state's largest organized labor umbrella organization, said that, well, there weren't any quid pro quos, but that there was an agreement that they would start communicating better about between the legislature and the wish list.
It's time now for our notes from the field, and Kent, we'll start with you this week.
Quick number. We always talk about the impact of billionaire politics on Illinois. If you look at five election cycles from 2013 through 2022, five election cycles, Bruce Rauner, Ken Griffin, and Richard Euland spent about $375 million supporting Republican candidates in Illinois, but J.B. Pritzker matched that money with $409 million worth of contributions. Those four individuals during the billionaire period spent $750 million, $788 million on Illinois politics. Pritzker won, and the other three individuals are no longer players.
All right. And Rick?
Well, obviously, we've been talking about some of the travails that Speaker Welch is having, and perhaps this is not is perhaps an inopportune time for all of this stuff to be surfacing, because this week, coming week, the National Conference of State Legislatures has its annual summer meeting in Chicago. And it's always supposed to be a kind of a showcase for Illinois and Chicago politicians. So we'll see how that plays out for the other delegations from across the country as they come to a place well known for various hinky politics.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included the Chicago Tribune chief political writer Rick Pearson and Professor Emeritus Kent Redfield. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from PiOrg, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country. Helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling change makers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. PI, Plan, Implement, Evaluate. Services and information at piorg.org.